Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
Could this movie be made after the year 2000 and maybe one, right? This could not exist post-9/11.
It shouldn't exist.
No.
Oof. I mean, yeah, the opening of this movie is insane. I think it's interesting to look at the differences between this movie and the 2019 movie, which is a crazy film in its own right.
Question. It made like a couple billion at the box office, right? It's like the number five highest grossing.
That movie came and went so quickly.
I don't know what you're talking about. 6 months it played.
Yeah. So Carrie, have you actually seen it? So you didn't see it in the theater anyway. Okay.
I would not recommend it. I have not seen the 2019 one at all. In fact, when I was about to watch the original, well, I guess it's not the original, but the 2000 Charlie's Angels this morning, and I searched Charlie's Angels on my TV, the 2019 one came up, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I remembered, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll watch it later, but I don't know if I will. I don't know if I'll ever see it.
I can't
in good faith recommend it. I will say it's not horrible. It could be worse, but it's just, it's worse than being like spectacularly bad, because it's just sort of unimpressive.
Yeah. You like wish it was sort of messier.
I wish it was messier.
Like,
that's
I
the
wish
thing.
That it yeah. like, I don't know, like you have Kristen Stewart. I'm like, do more. Like, with anybody.
Yeah. She's pretty fun in it, but it's
like Kristen Stewart is fun in everything. Like,
right.
But it's the fact that I forgot about a movie with Kristen Stewart in it for me is really sad.
Yeah. Like, that's truly, not a good sign. Yeah.
It's like, I remember Underwater more than that, and that's not good. I'm like, whew, she was under the water, guys. Come on.
She had that haircut, though. Who could forget
that
haircut?
She did. Oh, my God. I mean, that trailer was playing for years, I feel like,
it did.
Before the movie came
out.
Yeah.
God. Wow. Messy.
Oh, yeah. Remember when movies used to just be dumped in January in theaters, and now they're just dumped directly onto streaming services?
I know.
Instead
I feel
of in theaters?
Every month is, like, so serious now. I'm like, I miss, like, the, like, first 3 months of the year when everything was just garbage and you kind of had a break during award season, and now it's like here's like a new big Marvel movie like on Valentine's Day. I mean, happy for everyone, but you know.
No,
it's a lot to expend constantly, to always being like, all right, I gotta be focused here every month of the year, rather than just being like, I'm gonna go see this schlocky January nothing.
Yeah. Like, when would Charlie's Angels have come out? The 2000 Charlie's Angels, what month would they have put that in? Because did it come out like around Thanksgiving?
November 3rd.
This was a November drop?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
it
would
Thanksgiving
not be November.
Drop.
I feel like they'd put this in like on either on streaming, like it would be a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
Or it would be like late August.
Right. I was just like
end
August,
of summer.
April, something not a big month for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't see this being a big summer tentpole.
I think late August is good, because at that point it's like everyone's sick of summer movies. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to go see anything anymore. School is starting up and they're like, we'll just slide it in here.
Yeah.
Then it can kind of play like through September to October.
Right.
Like, it'll always have like a 3 p.m. and like a 9 p.m. screening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. No inconvenient time for anyone.
Right, right.
Nothing
You're like,
better.
When am I actually going to go see it? You're like, I guess I could go to the 9 o'clock, but it's late. Like, I don't want to go to that. The worst sort of screenings.
Yeah.
Anyways, the movie that we are talking about this week is Charlie's Angels.
The 2000 version of Charlie's Angels.
Yes.
Of course, the only canonical one that we recognize.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not throttling.
No. Well, actually, no. Well, we have to throttle.
We will we will fully throttle eventually. But not today.
Not today. Hello.
Hello.
I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
And joining us to talk Charlie's Angels today is entertainment writer Carrie Whitmer of The Ringer, of Vulture, of GQ. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm clearly already having a very good time talking about this movie.
How can you not for this movie?
Pitching like hypothetical scenarios that will never happen for no reason.
It's okay.
Hey,
you never know. And
you
like
never know.
Maybe this will get like a re-release, you know,
one
for
day.
Some reason.
That would be That would be amazing.
I mean, look, we're big box office and like release schedule nerds, so you picked the right audience, let me tell you. Yeah, we love that.
It's the things that weirdly stick in our brains that people are like, oh, why do you care about that? And we're like, it's interesting.
I'll tell you, I saw a tweet the other day that was like, podcasts need to stop talking about box office data. Nobody cares. And I was like,
care. That's all I care about.
That's the only part. Like, I'll listen to like some film podcasts and then I just stop after they have the discussion about the box office.
You're like, all right. And that was nice.
Because
thank
I think
you.
The commentary on that is really interesting. In the context, too.
Fascinating.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's the especially like I feel like even with this movie, it's so fascinating. I think the release of this movie, sort of where it tracks for these stars' careers, also like the supporting characters that show up, and you're like,
the cast is crazy. That could never happen again. Like,
no.
Crispin Glover? What?
Okay. Did Crispin Glover, this was a fun trivia fact I've read, where he didn't like any of the dialogue that was written for his character, so they asked them to literally remove it all, so he had no speaking lines the entire movie. Great. I mean, incredible thematic choice.
Yes. Right. Crispin Glover is so insane. Like, he's
scary.
So crazy.
He's unhinged in this movie.
Not just in this movie.
Like, I feel like his character in this movie is like just like Crispin Glover.
You like go to his house and he's just doing kung fu and you're like, okay, all right. Yeah. Got it. Cool.
I also read, I think it was in the same trivia fact, that he came up with a lot of quote unquote tics for his character, which involve the hair grabbing and the screaming.
Wait, what do you mean? Wait. Stop the press.
No.
Are you saying that he's doing tics and has little moments in this, like of ham, and he's just really making decisions? Are you saying that he's making active choices during this movie?
That was too much for not a good... Not
what do you mean?
So the hair thing is probably one of the most... is probably not even the... For me, probably the most disturbing part of this movie, which has aged a little bit better than I anticipated, to be honest.
I would agree. I was scared going in.
There's obviously certain things that we probably all know that have not aged well, but overall, it's like, especially for a McG-directed motion picture, it's not that horrible now.
Yeah,
I concur.
The hair is so scary.
The hair is the scariest part. I mean, it's truly upsetting, I think, at the end of the day. Like, I wrote in my notes while watching it, it was just like, I am actually actively afraid of Crispin Glover. Like, in this movie, like, it's not a horror movie, but, like, every choice he's making is just giving me, like, the chills.
The amount of hair that he yanks.
It's so much hair.
It's so much hair. Like, that's, like, you're gonna, like, pull, like, have, like, a scab in the back of your head from that. And, like, a ball, like... They're gonna have bald spots.
Oh, I think sure.
But he doesn't ever do it to Cameron Diaz, right?
He doesn't. It's only Drew Barrymore and Lucy Liu. Mm. So very interesting.
They have, like, hair that's easier to yank. And one thing I did notice, if we're gonna talk about Cameron Diaz, is that she will. Yeah, she's definitely more. I think the reason why they didn't pull her hair out, have her hair yanked, is because they just like kind of tend to make her the most sexy one.
Yes.
Like, she's always in the middle. Her skin is always showing more than Drew and Lucy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I feel like they couldn't, like, I don't know. They're like, McG's like, oh, well, we're not going to, like, have Cameron Diaz's hair pulled out because she's the sexiest one.
Yeah. Right.
That felt very intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
It is split pretty evenly in terms of screen time. I was surprised.
Yes,
I mean, I forgot how little plot this movie contains, or like, you know,
it's
character development.
It's the most convoluted. Like, that was the thing. Like, while watching it, I was like, literally, what the fuck is going on? Like, I don't know what the story is, I'm like, I'm with it. I don't get it, but I'm with it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's like about cell phones,
right? I feel like you go in and like by the time that they're like, we need to track down Sam Rockwell, you're like, I know none of this is gonna matter. Like, I'm just
you're like, Sam Rockwell's the villain
for the ride. I love Sam Rockwell in this movie.
Oh yeah, Sam Rockwell in this movie definitely like kind of shaped my sexual preferences. For sure.
Yeah.
But it also was like, while I was watching it this morning, I was like, I don't feel like this was like made for straight women to be into. Like, well, this,
I would agree with you. I would. That's Mick G is like such a strange,
not a
man.
Great director.
Very strange man.
He directed some good episodes of The OC, one could argue, but
I would say his features rather.
Yeah. Yes. Although I've heard that the Babysitter movie is kind of a serve, but in like a trashy way. Did he direct a Terminator movie?
He did. He did Terminator Salvation.
The Christian Bale one where Christian Bale famously yelled at the cinematographer or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, he did that. This Means War.
Oh, classic.
Oh my God.
A hit film.
This Means War is one of the first movies I watched like early in the quarantine. And it's just like, I have this memory of like watching This Means War and just like being kind of positive, like, oh, like this is only going to be like 2 weeks and then like we'll be back. And so now it's like this really like horrible,
it's like a gemstone
thing for me. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
How did that hold up for you?
Oh, This Means War?
Yeah.
Horrible. I also hadn't seen it before, but I was doing like research, so I was watching a bunch of Tom Hardy movies like for an article I was doing. And it's just like the least sexy movie. I'm like, how could you make like a movie about spies not sexy? Charlie's Angels is pretty sexy.
Yes.
Yes.
McGee brought none of that to This Means War.
No.
And he had Tom Hardy and Chris Pine.
Yeah.
I think we should cover that movie eventually, but that movie is insane. Yeah. It makes so many decisions that I don't agree with.
Yeah, it's like Chris Pine and Tom Hardy are like two of the
sexiest
most magnetic
men alive.
Not just like sexy, like hot, but like very magnetic on screen presences. And they're just, there's nothing.
With race.
And This Means War is very similarly like full of plot, but also plotless.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much going on, but then, like, I couldn't tell you what was happening while I was watching the movie. Or if I read the Wikipedia page, like, the summary, I would be like, what? Like, I don't remember watching this.
You're like, it meant war. I know that.
Yeah, I guess it happened.
I guess that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Charlie's Angels is kind of similar. Like, this is a movie that I watched constantly when I was a kid. Like, every sleepover, I was like, I would have, like, a tantrum if we're not watching Charlie's Angels. Like, I would, like, literally cry or, like, have a fit.
So when did you first get introduced? Like, what year? Like, how young were you?
When did it come out? I didn't see it in theaters because I was too young and I wasn't allowed to see PG-13 films yet. In 2000, I was...
No, you don't have to give age, but like, yeah, but like super young.
No, I'm trying. I can't even remember. But when I got super into it, I was like in like sixth grade. Mm. I think it was when it kind of had come out on like DVD or even VHS at the time. I don't remember. I don't remember my life. But yeah, so I definitely got into it like when I was a teenager. So I just thought it was so cool because I thought Lucy Liu was like the coolest person on the planet.
Dude.
I was obsessed with her. Loved Drew. But it was mostly I was obsessed with Lucy Liu, and I liked Luke Wilson, and I liked Joey from Friends, who I completely forgot was in this, even though he was part of the appeal of the movie when I was young.
Right.
He's like playing Joey from Friends
in
this movie.
He is playing Joey.
He's literally playing a dumb actor.
Right. Yeah. Like, does this exist in the Friends universe? Is that what we're discovering here?
It's also so weird to see the Friends in films during their Friends era, where I was
even after, honestly.
Truly.
Right.
Yeah. Where I'm like, whoa. Like, he's in, like, Friends era right now when this movie comes out, and you're just like, oh, it's Joey. Look at that.
He's in this movie. Really just, It's weird, and I think even though I had completely forgotten, that Matt LeBlanc was in this movie until I was watching it this morning, I was like, oh, I thought he was in this more. Like, I remember being in it way more. Two scenes.
Nothing.
But for me, as a kid, it was so significant because Friends was so big.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's so wild.
So much of this movie, I think, has changed, especially, like, I feel like, a lot of the scenes I remembered, but, like, what stood out to me or what I gravitated more obviously changed so much. Like, I watched this movie sort of missing Cameron. Like, I'm a huge Cameron Diaz fan, and I was like, I miss her presence on our screens so much. And so, like, that was my big takeaway from this, or, like, that also like Bill Murray was like all these like weird things. I'm like, I forgot that he's sort of like there for a lot of the movie in the background, just like doing bits. And you're like, okay, sure. Weird rewatching this movie. And
yeah,
this, I mean, I literally don't remember the last time I saw it. I mean, like maybe like 2006. 2005.
Yeah, I don't know if I had ever actually seen the whole thing. It's one of those movies where it's like I've seen so many bits of it. Mm. If it was on TV or like at sleepovers, but I don't think that I've ever like sat down and be like, right, because like,
oh, wow.
I didn't. Jordan was like texting me and he was like, the opening, I don't know about it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I haven't seen the opening. I don't know what to tell you.
You're like, okay, it's LL Cool J. Wait, no. Okay, LL it's Cool Drew Barrymore sort of in black rays. You're like, oh, no.
I mean, I agree with what you said, Carrie, where it's like, obviously, some of the bits have not aged particularly well, but they could have aged a lot worse, I will say.
Yeah.
Even it's like, there's like, you know, the geisha section or like their like Bollywood dance section. Again, I was like, obviously not amazing, but could be so much worse. Like, could be really egregious. It's not that bad. It's pretty quick.
They felt more like, to me, like, especially like the geisha one, just kind of felt like, here's like the background, like here's the setting.
Right.
And they weren't ever, there's some parts where they like kind of make fun of it, but not so
really
overtly. It's still bad and very culturally insensitive, but there are, especially from that era, there's a lot of things that are so much more offensive and so much worse.
Right. Totally.
Like, so the bar is pretty low.
I know it's kind of bad to defend, but for the time, it's actually pretty...
Like, you're like on a scale of shitty.
Yeah.
It's like better shitty than worse shitty.
Yeah.
Not acceptable, but better shitty.
Right.
I think that like that is one of the reasons, because this movie is obviously like still very popular. Like, people talk about it all the time. It's like a childhood classic for a lot of people. We'll get into more of that a little later. And I think that because it's endured relatively harmlessly, that's why people are still like, oh my God, I love Charlie's Angels. Like, you know, it's not so bad that now you go and watch it and you're like, I can't speak about this movie.
So
it's pretty good.
Like, this, it's like, I'm just thinking about this era, like this and Josie and the Pussycats. Like, a lot of movies featured like plane crashes in like the early 2000s.
Lilo
like
and Stitch.
Pre-9/11. Yeah, I'm like, like, what were we thinking? What was this, like, a fun bit? Like, what was going on now?
I feel like it feels weirder because it probably happened much more frequently, like you said, pre-9/11. And now it's like, you would just not do it, like, full stop. Yeah.
So wild.
There were a lot of plane crashes.
Right? I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, because I guess, like, the comp is, like, with Josie and the Pussycats, because I feel like these two have similar energy in the sense of just like very chaotic at times.
Yes.
And like just a lot of nonsense and business, but like good business.
Good business.
Like, I love Josie, you know.
I would say that Josie is better put together.
Oh, for sure.
Than Charlie's Angels. Like,
yes.
It has, you know, Charlie's Angels does like feel like properly chaotic.
Yeah. No, Josie has like a take. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But like apparently the Charlie's Angels script was like kind of a disaster for a very long time. And like what's on screen is very cobbled together. And obviously, like, so much of it is just action.
Right.
Which is...
Yeah, but that's kind of what I like about it. Like, it's just, it's so chaotic. If it was tight, if the story made sense, if there were, like, I don't know, if there were any parts in the beginning of the movie that are rewarding in the end, then I probably wouldn't like it as much. It would just be, like, a little more of a forgettable movie. But, like, the most consistent thing in the movie is Crispin Glover pulling out the hair.
Right.
And yes.
That's what I love about it. Like, it's just, Sam Rockwell, like, becomes Eric Knox becomes the villain, like, so randomly out of nowhere.
Right.
I love that. Like, that's like, one of the best parts of the performance. Like, he's just, like, this boring tech guy. And then he's this, I don't even know what to describe what he kind of becomes. Like, he wears, like the black, white
beater.
Like,
a super villain?
Yeah. Super villain. He, like, almost, he becomes literally a Bond villain. Like, the Fort Knox or whatever. Like, you're literally a Bond villain now. And you're wearing, like, pink tinted glasses.
Right.
Yes.
He has, like, a henchwoman sort of, like, doing his, like, side bidding, you know?
Yeah.
The whole Tim Curry arc, you think that's going to be something? Like,
where
the whole first
go?
Third of the
Nowhere.
Movie, they're like, Tim Curry is the target. We got to talk about Tim Curry. And then, like, he just doesn't exist for the rest
and then
of the
he
movie.
Just, well, doesn't Crispin Glover like slice his head off?
Yes.
Yes.
By the pool?
Yes.
And that's so random. Like, why did they do that? Like, right. They just like killed this guy. They killed Tim Curry for no reason other than to have Crispin Glover be creepy.
Right.
But yeah, did Tim Curry like even get paid for this? Like, or was he just like, oh, I'll do like one scene with Bill Murray.
Right, like we have to investigate and find out.
Yeah. Oh my God, I could not believe. It's like it is even weird to see Bill Murray essentially fourth billed in a film.
Yeah.
Where I was like, wait a minute, like what is this? He's just like in this as a supporting actor,
right?
And I feel like obviously Tim Curry doesn't necessarily have like the cachet that Bill Murray does. Although I love the man, but it's crazy to see him be like, hey, what's up? I was like, Tim Curry, what are you doing in this film?
Sure.
It's great.
The thing that threw me was the Tom Green appearance where he just shows up as Chad or whatever at the beginning. And I'm like,
oh, Chad.
I forgot that you were in this movie and that the bit is just that you're referencing yourself as a Chad. And I'm like, this is it? Like, what the fuck is going on here?
So my question has always been, does he call himself the Chad? Like, is that his name or is that like the name for his dick?
You know, I don't know.
I always thought it was the name for like his dick because she was like, the Chad was great. But was his name just Chad and was that just like a weird bit?
He's like billed as Chad. So maybe like both?
I was
but also
say
like
both.
Your read
Chad,
feels
but
right.
His dick could be the Chad.
Yeah. Is also Chad. Yes.
But like, I also think you're probably right.
Because even when I was a kid, that's what I thought. I thought he was referring to his penis.
You had your finger on the pulse. You knew what was right.
Yeah.
He and Drew Barrymore were dating during this
movie. They were dating. So this was before they got married. Woof. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So
producer
isn't that
Drew
exciting?
Barrymore.
Producer Drew Barrymore. She had the rights to the Charlie's Angels TV show before this movie. So like it's her project, which is why I was surprised that like it's like it is sort of like Cameron Diaz's The Spotlight, maybe, but it's very like broken up between the three of them. But I assumed it would be like
a Drew Barrymore vehicle,
which
she also takes like the more, I guess, like interesting character of the three. Not like interesting, but like an interesting choice for her.
Yeah.
Like it's like she's sort of playing like an alt, like,
she's the rebel
girl, right? Yeah. And you're like Cameron, like you would think that she would play like the Cameron Diaz, like perfect, like blonde by the beach, like, oh my God, you know, sort of thing versus what she's playing.
Yeah, especially at that time. It is kind of surprising that she was, I was so little, but I feel like Drew kind of had a reputation like in the 90s. So it's kind of surprising that she chose the more rebellious character to play if she was like kind of trying to keep an image. Like you would have thought she would have played Natalie, but
yeah,
I'm glad Dylan was my favorite. I thought she was so cool and I like still want to dress like her.
Oh my God,
and be her. So good for Drew.
No, she's great.
Yeah,
I love her. And like it was so cool that she produced this movie because of that, and like this movie was incredibly successful. She made 40 mil for the first movie and 80 mil for Full Throttle.
Good for her.
In terms of like producing, like,
damn,
not just as a star. I know she did that. She
good
did
for her.
That. Very exciting. I'm very happy for her.
I mean, she brought on McG, basically like removed guns from the movie because she wanted like, you know, the kicking and fighting and whatever. And
I like that. I think it's much better than the 2019. I won't talk too much about the 2019 one, I promise. But
there, it's okay. I want to hear about it.
There are guns in that one. And every time they like whip out a gun, I was like, what is this?
Right.
Like, do they use guns? I'm not really. I want to see the spy shit. You
did
know?
You ever watch either of you the show? Because I did not.
No.
Not really. I think there used to be reruns that probably my parents would watch when I was a kid, but I like didn't pay attention. You know, but I remember like seeing my parents watch it because I remember Farrah Fawcett.
Yes.
Being on the TV.
How could you forget?
Yeah.
Queen.
Yeah.
I think that like for a lot of people in our general generation, this is like the Charlie's Angels iteration.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've never even seen an episode.
No, me neither. That's why I was just, I'm just curious if it's like, if their guns are in there, if there's not, or like what the vibe of that show is, you know?
Yeah. But I think the lack of guns makes this kind of like a good kids movie. Like it is rated PG-13, obviously, but it is, you know, aside from all of like the, you see a lot of women in bikinis, like it's very very tame in terms, although I guess there is sex in
there's not really any
implied sex.
There is implied, and I mean, Dylan sleeps with not one but two men.
Two whole men.
The most violent part is probably when Crispin Glover murders Tim Curry.
Right.
Like, you see a little splash of blood, but you don't actually see it occur.
No. And it's all sort of such a heightened world that it doesn't really even feel, like, violent or anything like that. Like, it just feels sort of, like, campy.
Yeah.
Which I guess, like, works to its favor.
I was planning on taking notes this morning. This always happens for this kind of shit. I'm like, I'm going to take so many notes and I'm going to be so prepared. And then the only thing I wrote in all caps was camp.
Yeah.
It's true. If you're going to take one note, it's a good note to take. Yeah.
You pitched your tent. You knew what you were doing. Yeah. You're like, I'm invested in this.
And then I just wrote some of the characters' names so I wouldn't forget, but I remembered them. So
I already honestly forget all the characters' names, so that's impressive.
I think I can remember the three angels, and after that, I mean, Bosley, of course. After that, it's anyone's game.
Well, Charlie as well.
Oh, naturally.
The titular Charlie, as we all know, and his angels. I'll pose this to you guys, because I think it would be interesting to get your POV, because for me, watching this as like a man, I feel like it's very clear to see Mick G's sort of male gaziness on this. And there is a quote that he had where he was basically like, I'll just read it because I think it's sort of indicative of how he approached the movie, where he said, I'm this knucklehead from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I never got any girls growing up. And then I find myself looking over my shoulder and Cameron Diaz is there in a bikini, Drew Barrymore in a Swiss Miss costume, and Lucy Liu has this leather dominatrix thing. It was unbelievable. And so it's like, it's Mick weird G. because he's like so hypersexualizing them, but also feels like they have sort of their own authority at some points. But like, what, as women, what do you think?
Oh, thank you. That's such an interesting quote.
It's unhinged.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's like, again, I don't know, maybe I'm giving the movie too much credit, but it's like, I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, obviously, like, everyone is hot, but it could be, it's not as egregious as, like, a lot of other movies.
It's really not.
Yeah.
Especially at the time, like, I mean, we all remember the early 2000s and the late, like, the 90s, really, really bad.
Of course.
Not good.
Especially the early 2000s. So it's almost surprising that this movie is from that time, because of how, I don't know, like any other movie from that time, they would have just been in bikinis and like skimpy outfits the entire time. And Cameron Diaz kind of is like, she's definitely the most sexualized, I think. You could tell Mick G's the most into her. But it's not that bad. Like the most egregious shot isn't even that bad. When they get off the boat with Chad, going to like Fort Knox or whatever, and they're taking their clothes off as they approach the building, like by the beach, and you like see they're taking off their clothes, and then it stops. Like that's like the most. And then I guess the Lucy Liu scene where she's like, I don't even know what the plot is, so I can't even describe it, when she's wearing the leather suit and the glasses giving the class to the engineers or whatever. Like that was that's like maybe the grossest one.
Yeah,
that's so funny because that's my favorite part.
Is it really?
I was just gonna say, but I love when Lucy Liu is so like that's like her best scene in the her best sequence in the movie. She's so funny in it, like when she's rubbing that guy's head on her boob. Like what? But also, this is hilarious.
That's the weird thing. I agree because it's like this weird fucking world where you're like, I guess it's maybe the camp thing because you're like. It feels so high. Like when Cameron Diaz is like dancing in her underwear, like when she wakes up in the morning, you're like, this is so unhinged. But you're like, is it to the point where it's like sort of satire and like so heightened and campy that it sort of knows it? Like, is there like a knowingness to it? Or is it just like unaware and by being so unaware that it then becomes campy?
You're like, I think it's the latter. Or maybe like Mick G's interpretation of what is sexy like is just like funny unintentionally. Yeah. Like I think like the Cameron Diaz dancing in the underwear, is it like, what is on the underwear? Is it like Spider-Man or something? I was trying to look at it, but my TV's too small. Know.
Like I don't know either. Yeah,
it looks like it looks like boys' underwear with like a comic book character on it. But I'm like, that's like Mick G's fantasy, clearly.
Right.
Like
right.
That's what he and he wants to see like a hot woman in like a leather suit in an office.
Right.
Like that's
live
what
your
he wants.
Truth, dude. Yeah. You know? Like if that's what you're into, you go for it. I think that obviously like the sex appeal is sold as like a central part of the premise
right.
of this movie, where it's like they use sex appeal in situations like so frequently that it's like, you know, an established trick.
Where it's like their
part
weapon.
Of their yeah. their like repertoire. But I really liked what Jordan had like a take earlier off mic that I was really into, where you were like, it's sort of this like feminist fantasy land where you can be as sexual as you want to and not be objectified in gross ways, because obviously there's a lot of men being like, oh my god, you're so beautiful,
like awooga, yeah,
in this movie, but it's not creepy. Mm-hmm. It's very like innocent. It's they're like starstruck.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the men yeah. are so head empty. No thoughts, just like the most base, boring men. Like Cameron Diaz is like attracted to fucking Luke Wilson because he's like nothing.
Yeah, nice it's boy. A very, in a good way, like a kind of anti-men movie.
Mm.
In that they're yes. not like, I don't know. There was I didn't write this down because I was just watching the movie, even though I said I was going to take notes. But there was this one there. I was like mentally took notes of like a few parts where they kind of were like, we hate men. But or I guess Cameron Diaz says when Vivian, I think the
yes
lady villain, whatever. I don't even know who she is. She. The character, but when she breaks the phone, when she's on the phone with Luke Wilson, and Cameron Diaz is like, do you know how hard it is to find a man in Los Angeles? Like yes. little things yes. like that. I'm like, okay, like you're kind of aware.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps the actresses were very aware of what they were doing. And even if it wasn't scripted, they're like, this is what we're going to do with these characters. We're going to be like, not like girl power, which is why I think I like the movie. It's not like super Spice Girls girl power 90s stuff. It's right. more like, we're just badass. And like Drew Barrymore's like, I'm going to fuck two guys in the whole 90-minute movie.
Good for yeah. her, you know?
It is sort yeah. of that, yeah. Because it could be, like, it's definitely has that like early 2000s third wave feminism. Like, these girls are bosses and they're sexy and they're using their sex appeal to like get out of it. But it's not so egregious in the sense like some of the early 2000s stuff. It's well, yeah, so it's weird very... because like I want to have a clear cut take on the movie.
Here's the thing.
But it's like I don't, which is annoying.
Here's the thing. I feel like particularly with like the feminism and the sex appeal angle is that it's a very innocent movie. Yeah. It is like this weird almost, it's kind of like a kid's movie.
Oh, for in, sure, yeah.
In that like everything that happens, everyone is just kind of like, wow, good job. Yeah. There's no stakes. It's amazing. But it's like they're never really in danger. Yeah. They never really seem to, you know, worry about getting out of situations. And they're never worried about like being exploited while they're in situations.
Yeah.
Like the Cameron Diaz Soul Train dance sequence, which is like a whole thing in and of itself. But like it's the most like joyful, innocent, happy thing, and right. it's kind of just this world where it's like you can be as sexy as you want and no one's gonna catcall you.
Yeah,
they're gonna appreciate your sexiness, but in a nice way.
Yeah,
it's kind of great. I found that part really enduring and really charming upon rewatch, because I was like, it's a good world in which to do that. You don't need to like bring it, you don't need to have like 50 guys trying to feel up the angels yeah. while they're right. yeah.
I think Carrie, you were so. Right though, with like that the actress like on that too, like the yeah. actresses definitely I think had to know. And I mean, they're all in their own regards incredible goddamn actresses, you know what I mean?
I'll say something dramatic. This is my hot take. I think,
oh boy,
this is my personal favorite Cameron Diaz performance.
Ooh,
that's a good, that's a very hot take.
I'm not okay. gonna say that it's her best performance, but it is.
But it's your favorite.
It's your favorite.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
I think she's for me like that's the most I like her acting. I do really like her, but I think that's her. It's my favorite role.
Yeah.
She's just so like, she's just so unhinged and just like, she's incredible. So weird in this.
She's very weird.
Yeah. And I mean, we all know like a lot of times in movies we see, especially big studio movies with beautiful actresses, they try to make the character, oh, she's so weird. And like can't find a man, and you actually buy that Cameron Diaz is weird.
Oh, yes. I think all of the women are weird. You're like,
oh yeah, they are.
Every single one of them like has some sort of business going on, and I'm like, this doesn't make sense, but I like it. Like I love what you're giving us.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting Cameron Diaz take. Wow. That's because I'm now like trying to think what my favorite is.
I was gonna say, is it The Mask?
No.
No.
No. I think like The Holiday, honestly.
Oh, a good Cameron
like,
Diaz performance.
The Holiday or something about Mary.
Yeah. But like she was so good that specific pocket, and like I would love to see her, like she feels like she could come back and have a Reese Witherspoon Big Little Lies. And the fact that she hasn't had that and she's like just fully retired.
Well, she's got the Aveline wine.
Right, exactly. That's what I was literally going to say. She has her wine life that she's doing. Like, good for her. But like, she feels like she should come back. Maybe I'm going to make that my life mission is to like get Cameron Diaz back. Yeah.
All right, wait, Jordan, hear me out. I'm going to build your dream movie, a Cameron Diaz, Tom Cruise vehicle.
Well, that exists. And you know what movie that is.
It's Night and Day.
I was just going to say, was that her in Night and Day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's another thing
directed
for you, Brooke.
Directed by James Mangold.
Yes. You want to know something else about that movie?
Oh, me too.
Set in Boston.
No way.
Before it goes international.
Really?
Yes. And as a Bostonian, I was like, what the fuck? Tom Cruise in Boston. Cameron Diaz. Is this my favorite movie? And then I saw it like 6 times and I'm like, I still could not tell you what happens in that movie, which is so upsetting.
A similar genre to Charlie, to McGee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is so weird because I like Mangold too, but I was like,
yeah,
it feels like an experiment versus like a film.
Yeah,
which is annoying.
That's kind of what I like about Mangold though. Like I feel like he was just like, oh fuck it, I'll make this like weird romantic comedy action movie,
right?
Whatever.
And it's like
time.
Sort of the last movie where Tom Cruise is kind of like sexual with someone. If you look at his career, because it's like that, and
Vanilla Sky.
Well, that's of course also with Cameron.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, is she the one that's like?
She's the one. Yes.
I swallowed your cum and it meant something.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
It had to be said.
Incredible movie, but also very unhinged. Wild that they're in both.
Wow,
yeah,
that's
good
crazy.
For them.
So I you already have the dream vehicle that I was going to build you, but yes,
I really appreciated the effort.
Maybe Cameron needs to be the lead of her own action franchise like Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
she could do it. She could do a John Wick.
That's what I was just gonna say. Get her a John Wick.
I could see it. I think that like it's really interesting because of the three women in this movie, Lucy Liu is the only one that like consistently does action. Mm-hmm. Like Cameron Diaz and Drew Barrymore are so much like in the rom-com, like
right,
leading lady pocket, and of course, like I mean, I'm obsessed.
Well,
with
now
Lucy Liu.
Drew is the queen of daytime TV.
The queen of daytime
TV. As we all know,
she like cooed Ellen. Good for her.
she chopped Ellen's head off like Crispin Glover.
Oh gosh,
she did. Oh, and speaking of someone who was also in Charlie's Angels with Drew Barrymore, I think it was like the first couple months of the Drew Barrymore show. She did like her first like sit down with Tom Green like after their divorce like on the show, and it is so awkward.
I need to
it's
see
amazing.
That.
You have to watch this after we finish recording. It is so weird.
That's incredible.
That's insane for her to be like on my show in its infancy.
That's sort of the thing where like Jada and Will over like the pandemic had their like red table sit down, and you're like, you guys don't need to air out your like divorce for us. Like, I love it, but you don't have to.
I was gonna say, please do. But
the Drew and Tom Green one felt a little less gimmicky.
Got it. Okay.
Like it felt more like the Drew Barrymore show in general is just like Drew's like it's really all in her heart. You can tell she's you can tell that this was her idea and she genuinely wanted to do it. And Tom was just like, oh, okay, love you, Drew. Yeah. But it's really weird.
Wild. Okay. We'll be going to that immediately after this recording.
I love her show. It's great.
And the first episode, I think, Cameron and Lucy Liu were on.
Right. They reunited the angels.
Yeah.
Oh, I love them all. Drew Barrymore is the perfect candidate for being a daytime talk show host. She has the perfect energy. I love seeing her. I'm glad that, like, there's so many celebrities, like, particularly, like, female celebrities over the pandemic that were doing, like, their little Instagram live, like, cooking or, like,
Selena.
Anything that is, you know, very put together, like Jennifer Garner or Natalie Portman, to like the unhinged.
I was just gonna say, Natalie Portman's is, I fall asleep, I'll just put it on to fall asleep.
It's so calming. Yeah. To like January Jones being a crazy person.
January Jones' Instagram saved me. Yeah.
I know.
They gotta put her on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Right? It's so good. When she has her. Like the doll and she's like, pow, pow, pow. I'm Emma Frost.
She just posted this really weird Instagram that was, did you see this? It was like a picture. I think she was at some F9 party with Charlize Theron and like Connie Britton.
Oh my God.
I forget who else it was. It was someone so random. And January Jones like did this post of, oh, so nice to see all my like best friends. And I'm like, since when are you friends with Charlize Theron and Connie Britton? But it's from like this angle where it was like clearly like 10 people taking the photo, and it's someone like, she posted the photo that was from someone like on the far left, so it's like a really weird angle and no one is looking at that phone.
No.
It's so funny.
It's amazing.
January.
That's so good.
Yeah.
I love her.
It's the like
unhinged.
Section of the internet is like my favorite shit, and it's great that Drew Barrymore essentially like turned that into her daytime talk show. It's amazing.
Drew's like the leader.
Yes.
It's a little cult they all follow. You were saying though on Lucy
God.
Has like an action career.
Ooh, I mean,
she does.
Yeah.
Big agree. And I mean, she is goddamn incredible in this movie.
Look, if we're gonna pick a favorite, I have to pick Lucy Liu from this movie. What were you gonna ask, Carrie?
Oh, I was gonna ask, like, what had Lucy Liu done action before?
She was pretty unknown when this came out. Cameron Diaz was reportedly paid $12 million. Drew Barrymore was paid $9 million. And Lucy Liu was paid $1
million. But Drew got that this producing movie. Money.
Yeah.
Right.
So she's good. But it was
like, yeah, I'll only take nine, but 32 also.
I'll just take the other half. So the Lucy Liu character was supposed to be Tandy Newton, who had to drop out because of Mission Impossible 2.
Okay.
So Lucy Liu was like not sort a top like choice in. At all. They were trying to get like Lauryn Hill and like
that would have been weird.
Yeah.
Been like what is that movie? Yeah.
People in that zone. I think for a long time they were like trying to get like a black actress and they got Lucy Liu instead, and they had to change the Vivian character was supposed to be like a Lucy Liu type, and they changed her to Caucasian when they got Lucy Liu. So, I mean, I'm...
They can't have more than one Asian lady in the movie, of course.
No.
But they can have as many
one diverse person.
Want. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so Lucy Liu was pretty unknown during this movie, and like, obviously she pops right after this. Kill Bill is 2003.
Yeah.
But I just think like it's so weird to see her being like the newbie and she's popping so beautifully.
She plays like a star. The like you first... watch this and you're like, oh, you're going to be like a hero.
You are the girl. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I couldn't recall anything from like the 90s, because they're like it's really shocking because she almost feels like it's her moment and she's like the most famous one at the time. Like, you know how you can kind of tell when an actor is like kind of in their prime and they're like riding high or whatever, and you can just see it in their performance in a good way. You kind of feel that with her in this. But the fact that this is basically her, not her debut, but her, the thing that made her famous is really crazy. Cause you'd think that's the thing that she does 2 years after she's famous.
Right, exactly.
It was like just Ally McBeal before this. Like, that's
wow.
It. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, because I think it's really Kill Bill that, like,
I mean, yeah, like
skyrockets her.
Yeah.
But I mean, the first shot of Lucy Liu taking off her skydiving helmet and
iconic,
tossing all that hair with her freckles on full display. I mean, I'm just
amazing.
I'm dead. Like, it's over.
What is she doing?
Much.
Like, I feel she's like
she was on.
Thing, so she's doing
she was
women.
Elementary.
Yes.
Was she Watson?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I have watched some of that show. That was like my parents' like favorite show.
That feels like a parent's favorite show.
And so whenever I would be home, like they would watch it. I'm like, this is like kind of fun. I mean, both of those actors are really good. And then
who's the guy?
It's Johnny Lee Miller.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he just cast on The Crown? I think.
Yes. He was.
Oh.
Yeah. As the prime minister. Oh gosh. I'm trying to think. What was that show Lucy Liu was on? Dirty Sexy Money? That was good.
Oh my God.
Well, she was recently on Why Women Kill, which is like that CBS All Access series. Why Women Kill?
No, yeah, why?
You'll fucking find out.
Oh boy.
What is that?
It seems pretty good.
I agree.
I've been dying to watch it, but I don't have CBS All Access, I refuse to get it.
Yes.
So yeah. I haven't been able to watch it. But basically, it's like there's three generations of women that live in the same house that are all plotting to kill their husband. So it's like Lucy Liu.
Oh, okay, I'm getting CBS.
Right, like
right.
Yeah.
It's Jennifer Goodwin plays like a 50s housewife. Lucy Liu plays like an 80s power businesswoman, and Kirby Howell Baptiste plays like a modern. Like career woman, I'm pretty sure.
This sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Have not seen her in a long time.
No.
Yeah, she was chilling, and it's so funny because now they're doing. It's like an anthology series, so they're doing season two, and Lana.
Del Rey.
I was gonna say if Lana Del Rey is in this, I'm in.
That would be
incredible.
Jennifer Goodwin's Once Upon a Time co-star, Lana Perea, is the lead now. It's cool. It's like 50s Hollywood set. It sounds great. Honestly,
you're saying all this, and I'm like, why am I not watching this
you
show?
Gotta look up the promo pics of like Lucy Liu specifically.
I've seen a lot of ads for I'm getting countless ads for it on like Twitter and Instagram and stuff. Yeah. I see it everywhere. So
it's supposed to be good.
Well,
I should just be paying you to tell people what it is.
I know.
I'm doing my best.
Why Women Kill sponsor us?
Please. Yes. And since then, it just seems like she has been on the Drew Barrymore show.
Well,
She's
doing the new Shazam.
But
as like the villain.
Ooh,
which is like going to be fun.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
get that DC villain money, baby.
Absolutely. But it's like she doesn't. I mean, like, looking at her film stuff, it's like she does like a lot of like animated movies, and she's like Set It Up.
I was gonna say I have to shout out
Set It Up.
Right.
She's great in Set It Up.
She Set It Up.
Not to be like Lucy Liu is so hot, but like Lucy Liu is so hot.
I think it was the 2000s Oscars. She wore this like red dress.
Yes.
You'll know. Yeah.
I know exactly the one.
It's my favorite Oscars look that I've ever seen.
She's so beautiful.
It's just absolutely stunning. And it's like one of those, especially in like 2000 Oscars, most of those, you ain't wearing that shit ever again and you're embarrassed.
Yeah, no.
Like she could wear that to like the 2022 Oscars and you wouldn't know that it's vintage. Like,
oh, that's so cool.
It's so good. I get emotional thinking about it. It's beautiful fashion. Lucy's amazing. Love. And to think that that was like her, like, just a few months before that, she basically had her big splash.
Right.
Amazing.
She's always been on fucking top of it. She's so poised. She's so put together. Oh, we've actually talked to, I don't know if we talked about her very much, but we did cover Chicago back in the day, which
she
is a great part of.
She's so good at Chicago. Yeah.
She's amazing
pops
in that movie.
The fuck in that movie. She's like in it for 3 minutes?
Yeah.
I know. I remember when my mom took us to see that one day and we had like a snow day. So my mom was like, oh, well, I got to get these fucking kids out of my house. So like, I'll take them to the movies to see Chicago. And when we were like driving home, my mom was like, well, what was everyone's favorite part of the movie? And I said, Lucy Liu.
And you were correct.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
In that tone, too. And your mom was like, wow, do I have a cinephile on my hands? She knew.
She made it happen. Yeah. I do blame my parents for that. Even though they definitely weren't trying to do that to me or any of their children. And I also recently rewatched Chicago, and she is just as good in it as I remembered when I was like 13.
She's the best.
She's so good.
I'm obsessed with that movie. It's really great.
Brooke. You know, this movie has a lot of costumes and outfits.
It does.
And I've been wondering, like, I'm thinking about becoming an angel. Is there somewhere I should look to sort of get a new outfit to fit in with the girls?
Yeah, you should go. to Superyaki.
Oh my god.
Our best internet friends. Should. You and your besties should all go hang out at Superyaki and buy all of their lovely clothes because you are going to look so fly, ready for spy training.
Just call me an angel.
Let me tell you, if you love movies, good ones, bad ones, whatever it is, Superyaki is the place for you as they have dedicated their entire lives to bringing you, the listeners, top quality merchandise, celebrating everyone's love for cinema that we collectively share. We wear them all the time.
Absolutely.
Shout out to current guest Carrie Whitmer, who is
literally wearing
Superyaki and has a Superyaki water bottle next to her.
Hey, look, the Yaki world just keeps growing.
It's the best. We love them so much, and they are eco-friendly and they ship friendly, and they're just the best, and they'll send you fun little goodies when you buy their merch.
There's nothing better than walking home, seeing a nice little package on my step, opening it, and look what's in there. A lovely Yaki thing, a little trading cards,
yeah,
a smile on my face.
Look, you already know that we're obsessed with them. So
oh, absolutely.
If you haven't bought from them by now, what are you waiting for?
Absolutely.
Go get check on it right out. Now.
Get on that airplane.
Yeah.
Go, baby.
But luckily, you know, we've got a little something to help you out.
Ooh.
You can use code SUPERQQ at checkout for 10% off. That's SUPERQQ, all caps, no spaces. So look, if you want to get your spy game on, if you want to get your fashion game on, you know where
to
go.
At the same time.
Absolutely. You know where to go. Superyaki.com. That's SUPERYAKI.com.
Let's go, girls.
Since we're talking about all these really beautiful women, should we talk about like the legacy of this movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, I think that ties into the queerness too.
Yes,
like,
it
does. The queer legacy of the movie, yeah.
Yeah, so this is considered to be a modern queer classic by many people. What did you say it's called? A root classic?
Well, so yeah, in But I'm a Cheerleader, a great movie. They talk about like your like gay root films, and like this for a lot of people is like a gay root movie that was like an awakening for them, because it like basically like if you literally go onto Letterboxd or read reviews, there's like countless articles of people just being like, this was like my queer awakening movie, especially for people like our age or like a little bit older, younger, whatever it may be, is like it's sort of right in the pocket of just like enough like sexualization where you're like, oh, I'm like attracted to these people, and I'm also sort of like yearning for this like female intimacy that they have, like what is this thing, how can I get it, and like how the men are sort of like nothing in the movie, so it is really just about like these women just being together.
Besides,
you know?
Sam Rockwell, you're not paying attention to any of the
No.
Sam Rockwell kind of goes from like a boring straight guy, and then if he's just like kind of seems gay when he's evil,
right?
Yes. The classic journey that people undertake when they decide to play a villain.
I like wish he was doing these roles more. Like he's so good as a small character actor.
I love him.
And now he's like, God, yeah. I wish that Sam Rockwell and many other actors could just have a little fun every once in a while. You don't always have to play whatever
George
he was
Bush.
In Three Billboards. Yeah, oh, George Bush or like some racist dude in Mississippi or whatever.
Right.
Some,
the, whatever. The Three
what
Billboards.
Was that movie? Yeah.
Right. Missouri? There were so many billboards.
There were so many of them.
And they were outside Ebbing, Missouri. Oh my God.
You know, the funniest thing is that he did the exact same role the next year in this film called The Best of Enemies with Taraji P. Henson, which is honestly, I'm not going to say it's good, but like it could have been a worse movie. Mm. I was like, sure. 2 out of 5. You know,
okay.
Maybe 2.5. But like, it was crazy. I was like, so Sam Rockwell immediately won the Oscar and then turned around and was like, I'll take one more of those, please. Mm. Thank you. Like, I'll take the role. But yo, he's great when he's having fun.
Yeah.
He has similar energy as he does in Charlie's Angels in Iron Man 2, which is a bad movie.
Yes.
Like, it's like unpleasant to watch, but you can just like watch Sam Rockwell Iron Man 2 on YouTube and you get the gist.
I agree.
Yeah.
He's fun in that.
I even like
Mickey
him.
Mickey Rourke's doing so much
it's
in that
too
movie.
Much.
He's like, my bird. And you're like, oh, no. I don't want to know about your bird.
That movie is obviously a train wreck. But no, Sam Rockwell is so watchable. I even love him when he's kind of like doing his annoying thing and things like, not to invoke Mr. Right, but like Mr. Right or like Seven Psychopaths. It's like,
Seven Psychopaths,
Yeah. I enjoy him in that stuff too, but I like him more when he is like a bit part, mm-hmm. sort of like
this. Well, I mean, he kind of does it in JoJo where he's like, I'm going to be a flamboyant gay Nazi. And you're like, I guess so. And you're like, I don't know. Sure. I don't get what's going on here.
I fully forgot about that subplot. And every time I watch it, I'm like, right.
I fully forgot about that entire movie. Which I know. I could not even tell you if I saw it or not, but I'm pretty sure. I think I did, but I don't even remember if I saw it or not. But I remember mm-hmm. that, so I must have seen it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I've seen it one more time than I would like to. I think I've seen it 3 times, which is way too many.
That's a lot.
I know. Because I watched it, you know, did my due diligence. And then I think I watched it with my family because they wanted to. And then I think I watched it maybe again with a different sector of my family that also wanted to watch it.
Families love that. That was like one of those like Oscar movies that my parents were like, well, have you seen Jojo Rabbit? And I'm like, how the fuck do you know about this movie? Like,
right. This, like, why? Weird. It had like a weirdly huge like opening and run. Like that whole, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll discuss maybe, I guess.
I don't want to.
Please don't.
But wait. Okay. So we really went off the rails on Sam Rockwell. But to talk about, no, it was deserved.
Talk about
we
the
had
women.
To do it. To talk about
the women.
Yes.
To talk about gay awakenings. Yeah, I think that like it sort of plays into the weird fantasy of this movie where it's like, isn't it great when you and your besties are spies? Like, that's what this movie is.
Yeah.
And like, I think that that is very freeing to especially like a lot of women and girls growing up that are like, I want that. And like, you sort of want the freedom from men that this movie implies that you can have as an adult woman. And I also think that like, cause like we said, it is a little male gazy, but it's also like, you really are watching like very powerful women do incredible like stunts and stuff like that. And this is one of the only like female action comedies of this era that I can think of. So I think that like all of that sort of created this like perfect storm for kids to be like, I am gay because of this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, the Letterboxd reviews are hilarious.
Oh, they're great. It's just like you go
I'm
through.
I'm going to pull up a couple.
Great.
I want to hear about this.
You just scroll through and people are just like, oh yeah, I'm queer because of this movie. And you're like, wow, the impact that this had.
It definitely is like what you said, like this like almost like fantasy world that the movie exists in. And it's like the sort of the McG gaze, I guess we could call it. Because it's not really a male gaze. It's like, it's just
the McGaze?
The McGaze. It's like so weird and kind of unhinged. And that I can see how it could relate or people, like queer people could see, oh, like I'm seeing this from a perspective I've never seen before. Because even though it was McG, a straight man's vision, it's like, this is such a weird vision.
Right.
That it's like so different from what you see before that. Like all these other movies with like Cameron Diaz or Lucy Liu or Drew Barrymore or any other ladies at the time are just going to be shots of their ass and like running on the beach in a bikini. This movie could have easily been more of that than what we got, but instead we get them in like sexy leather. There's a lot of leather in this movie.
So much leather.
I think it's the leather, it's the tactical outfits, and it's like, it's the fun. Like I feel like a lot of times like sexy women equals very serious, sultry women. Or like, you know, bitchy women that are also sexy, but like don't want you to like think that they're sexy. And like the Cameron Diaz like dancing around in her underwear scene, it's like so innocent and like really just like fun. And so I think, it's weird. It's like not a regular male gaze. It's like a special male gaze.
Yeah, it's the McGaze. And then there's also another thing that probably plays into it is that there's like so much like weird role playing, I guess, in their disguises.
Yes. Well, they wear like drag.
They do. Look, we gotta talk about the drag Barracuda Lucy Liu as a dominatrix sequence, because like, I mean, Jesus, I think it's the combination of the song, which kicks in immediately, like, yes.
I mean, one of a million, like, they were like,
so many needle drops.
How many needle drops?
Was Charlie's Angels the first movie to use Barracuda for like a women power moment in a movie, or was that there before? Because every other movie does it now. Didn't like Birds of Prey use it?
Yeah.
Every single goddamn movie has
every
been like,
every single goddamn movie
how do
with
we do
women.
It? Right.
Like, you guys can't like look up another song, but to be fair to McGee and like the music supervisor, that was like one of the only songs in the movie that does not have the word angel in the title of the song.
Right. Yes.
That was one of my favorite things about the score is they're like every song with the word angel in the title, give it to me. We need it. I mean, look.
What is our music budget is out of control. Like, we can't pay for all these McGee.
It's like that tweet where it's like, someone please help me budget this. My film is dying.
Yes.
Look, I can't blame them for playing Don't Call Me Angel in the beginning because, like, of course you have to, but Jesus Christ. Talk about an overused song in film. That kicked in and I was like, no, I'm already checked out. But I love the soundtrack. It is awesome.
It's wild. It's like 30 songs.
Smack My Bitch Up.
Yeah.
One of the most iconic needle drops in film history. I say that earnestly.
Yes.
There's a, like a
dude, Baby Got Back? Right. Like, what?
There's like a Michael Jackson needle drop. I forget the song, but it's for like.
It's Billie Jean. And it's for
Billie
like,
Jean.
Yeah.
For 5 seconds.
Yes. I don't even think they had to pay for that.
It's literally probably not. It's like, it's just like the opening chords for her walking out. And then that's it. And you cut away and you're like, why was that the needle drop? You didn't need a song.
The only reason they did it is because when Dylan is like describing how she's gonna beat all the men's asses, like with her hands tied behind her back, she says, and then I'm gonna moonwalk out of here. And she does to the song something that's not even a moonwalk. Like
it's Drew not.
Barrymore could clearly not physically do a moonwalk, which fair, like most of us can't. And
it is a backward
Jean.
Shuffle. Like it is it is not even close to a moonwalk.
But to be fair to Drew Barrymore, I probably couldn't even do that.
So, oh, no. For sure. Yeah. No, she's more in shape than absolutely me. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But yes, I think that there are a lot of like good, like we said, it is like third wave feminism, like ooh, girl power. But a lot of the sequences actually rock.
Mm.
I love all the wire work. I love that it's completely it's impossible for them to do any of these kicks in real life. Like they're essentially like walking through the air and then connecting their foot with someone's face at the end of the journey. It's crazy, but I'm obsessed with it. The stunt coordinator makes a cameo in the opening plane sequence. He plays the guy who's like talking to those girls over champagne.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
good for him.
But
he got a role in the weirdest part of the movie.
Yeah.
Right, truly.
Although I do like that oneer. The whole opening is like
the plane. Yeah.
Yeah. A plane oneer. It was good.
It was like I just didn't know what to expect. Well, like all of a sudden it starts and I'm like, wow, okay. Well, there is also I wrote this down. Did you think that the male flight attendant talking felt a little queer coded?
I mean, there's like, no question, but that's it's so much of a trope that I was like, I don't even want to bring
just
it
even
up.
Mention
yeah,
it.
That
well,
felt, that
here
felt
I am.
Like,
yeah.
Like at the time, it's like, well, even now I feel like there are people who are like, oh, any male who's a flight attendant is gay.
Yep.
So we have to cast like this kind of guy in this role.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Which is like, oh, nice.
Yeah, like that is...
That's
right.
Like,
yeah.
That's maybe almost like the most offensively early 2000s part of the entire movie.
It's just so on the nose. You're like, oh, come on, guys.
I was on pins and needles when they got to the Soul Train scene, which is actually like fine, but I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't remember how it goes, but actually it's nice. And they all... You know, everyone yells "Go white girl" at Cameron Diaz. Mm-hmm. So good for her.
Jesus.
And she dances to "Baby Got Back."
Yep. My God.
I don't know. It's a movie about women.
It is.
I even like when you know you have the female villain Vivian, right? I think when she shows
Vivian,
up. This girl when she shows up and she's like, "Never send a man to do a woman's job." I was like, "There it is." I was waiting for the line.
Right.
The line about how
like, women
are
can
great
only do this. Yeah.
But it's fun because it's so lighthearted and like I just think that if this movie had even a little bit more on its mind it would kind of be a disaster.
Oh
but
yeah,
because
it
has
to do something
absolutely nothing on its mind. You're like, okay, great. I think that's one of the problems with the 2019 reboot.
It's like trying to do too
much. Trying too hard to be like feminism,
right? To be like a film about, but and it's like I think that it's self-inflicted pressure to be like, well, we need to have a take on this movie, and it's like you really don't. Like
right.
We
like
will
the concept
go
of Charlie's
and
Angels
see
is like
pretty women do
goofy.
Their thing. Yeah,
it's like inherently okay. You're never gonna see the man. Like that's like the whole bit. Like it's just gonna talk to you. It's like in like everything about it, you're like, oh, this is dumb and goofy. Like,
yeah.
Why do we have to make this sincere and serious?
And it should just be fun.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is hilarious. That shot of the compositing is so goofy in this movie. Not great. But like when the missile goes in and like Charlie like moves his hand out of the way or whatever, and it like goes through the house, and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then they basically do like a punch in on Sam Rockwell being like, uh-oh.
Oh no. Yes. And then his plane blows up as they leap into the water.
Yeah.
The second movie we've covered in which queer people jump from a helicopter into the water.
Are you talking about 22 Jump Street?
Yes.
Oh, 22 my God. Jump Street.
We had the male point of view and the woman point of view now.
Yeah.
The part where, so Sam Rockwell is like in the helicopter and he like launches is it like a torpedo? I don't know what weapons are called.
Something.
Because I'm not a straight man. So they have, like, he launches the torpedo or whatever the fuck it is at his own, like, castle or whatever at, like, Fort Knox. And, like, he has a bunch of people in there who work for him. I guess villains don't care. So I guess he is essentially a Bond villain in that he didn't give a shit. But all those, like, dudes that Drew Barrymore, like, beat up,
they're all dead.
They're all dead.
Absolutely.
I guess that's what happened. And Crispin Glover, I guess they die in that explosion.
Yeah. But
plot twist. Crispin Glover comes back in the second one.
Oh, does he?
I think so, yeah.
I remember I saw Full Throttle in theaters, like, right when it came out, and I never watched it again. I should rewatch. Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
I'm going to confirming right now, but I believe, yeah, Crispin Glover was back in the next one.
Ooh, I mean,
I cannot believe he came back, even though he hated the dialogue.
Yeah, he's like,
have dialogue in the second one?
I'm gonna guess no. They were like, it's gonna be a bit. We like it now.
Right. I've heard that Full Throttle, I don't remember anything about it, but I've heard that it's just as good. I know that Demi Moore is like giving like very good like Demi evil Moore. Lesbian energy in that movie. Fucking Justin Theroux is in Full Throttle.
Love that.
Which, like, hello. I have to see it because I would watch anything with Justin Theroux.
You're
I'm so obsessed
man.
With him.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so obsessed. Like, even if
I'm obsessed with him in sweatpants and The Leftovers.
Oh my God.
Him jogging in those gray sweatpants. Ooh.
Can we talk about how in The Leftovers you're like, this is like a normal small town sheriff. He's a good guy. And then the second he takes off his shirt and is like, there's the absolute most jacked man you've ever seen. I was like, oh my God.
You're like, is this what all sheriffs look like?
Well, I just wasn't, because it's like, you know, it's HBO. It's serious. Right. It's about real people. And then he just looks like an Abercrombie
model. It's like him and John Bernthal in The Walking Dead. You're like, ah, yes, John Bernthal, the most normal, sexiest cop of all time. You're like, okay, sure.
Oh my God. I have a brief John Bernthal story. It's very short.
Oh, please.
So
please.
Last year, like right before the pandemic, my grandpa died, and I had to go to Chicago for his funeral with all my family, and my uncle was driving us to the funeral. And for some reason, he was like asking me, oh, well, what are like some shows you've been watching? And I said something with John Bernthal. And he said, oh, me and Johnny used to ball every weekend in Santa Monica. And I said something, but it was like right after I said something like very sexually explicit about John Bernthal. It was really great.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you're friends with him? And he's like, yeah, like I could text him right now. And like,
me
okay,
and Johnny
sure.
Bernthal.
No, this is your ticket. This is your chance. Oh,
wow.
What do you
think balling with Johnny Bernthal?
I know.
Entails?
I'm like, how? I don't know.
Dang.
Wow.
I mean, I would love to hang out with John Bernthal. Seems like a great guy.
Oh yeah, great hang.
He does.
Great hang.
He's one of the only celebrities where I have like when he posts on Instagram, I get like a push notification.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's amazing.
I feel like you can never reveal your push notifications, like, unless it's to people that you really trust, because it says far too much about like very
specific things.
It's weirdly specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'll never reveal it. It's really embarrassing.
Yeah, no.
But
I have
to turn some
embarrassing
off lately,
ones.
And I like really regretted some of them.
Oh no!
I usually have all my notifications off for Instagram and Twitter because I can't handle it. But I turned them back on recently, I think, to get notifications about something. And I was like, I need to stop getting notifications when people post. Like, it was the same thing where I was like, oh, I was just really thirsty at this point in time, and now I need to walk that back.
I have like the Twitter and Instagram notifications turn off, but you can turn them on for only specific people. So right. Those are like John Berthold, one of them.
I respect that. I love it. It's a good choice for you.
And like Jane Fonda.
Like, of course.
And Cher, I have her Twitter, but she's getting a little much. But like, I can't miss a Cher tweet. She's
they're so
crazy.
Good. They're incredible. It's a piece of poetry with every tweet.
Cher would have been good in a third Charlie's Angels.
Oh, she was like, they like bring her
She's
in as like
right
a grandma
energy.
Angel
yeah.
or
yeah.
something. Yeah.
Oh, like the previous iter, like yeah. the previous yeah. generation
That's
of
inspired
angels.
Inspired casting
Ooh.
Right there.
I
She's
think we can
like
make it
so
happen.
Camp. Like, did they not make a third one because Full Throttle did so poorly?
Probably.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Let's see if Wikipedia will tell me. Oof. 7 nominations at the Razzies. Come on, Full Throttle.
What?
Not great.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, many of the Razzies are terrible.
But I guess I should rewatch it because I feel like people love that movie now.
Right. I think
but
Full Throttle.
It's probably part of it becoming, like, kind of becoming like a queer canon.
Yeah.
Right.
I think franchise. So too. Yeah, I totally yeah. agree. Where it's like, and there's only two of them, so it's easy to watch them back to back. And
yeah.
I think like,
and they're
like
short.
80 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Demi Moore is like 50% of like what people love about Full Throttle from in a queer way. I mean, and also in like a cinema way. But like,
yeah,
people
yeah.
Are like obsessed
what she's
with what Demi Moore is giving in that movie. It's great. I mean, these are so campy. They're so much fun.
Is there any like sequences or scenes that we should like touch on? I'm like,
I mean,
as
I
we
talked
said, there's
about
like
my...
zero plot, so it's like really not even about. Like what plot happens, but it's like, are there scenes that you love or whatever?
Be discussing the plot. I mean, I
no,
already talked about
the, we don't need to
barracuda.
Discuss the plot.
The barracuda sequence is like so
that Melissa McCarthy
hot.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh my god! Right. Wild that she's in this.
Truly insane. I think that like, you know, there are some, obviously there's a lot of actors who like popped later in life where you'll see them and you'll be like,
yeah.
oh my god, like Octavia Spencer or whatever,
right.
But I've never seen like bit part Melissa McCarthy. I was
me
so
either.
shook.
Yeah,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
It really blew me away.
Was she's
it,
adorable.
Had she mostly like been in TV before or like doing improv and like doing like
had
comedies
because is this because Gilmore Girls hasn't happened yet,
yeah.
and I think like that's a big
or
touchstone
had it
for
just
her.
Started.
I don't because this is 2000. I want to say
did
Gilmore
Girls
was...
start in 2000 or 2001?
It has to be 2000.
I feel like it started 2000.
This
in
is
fall of 2000, or maybe it was mid-season show. I don't know.
Let's see. This is so funny because I know that it was at least at season 4 by 2005 because that's
okay.
when Jared Padalecki left to go do.
Supernatural.
Wow.
My gosh, the most dramatic show of all time.
Oh my god, wait, Carrie, were you tweeting about the drama? Okay, my god, there's such good drama. I explained it all to Jordan.
Yes.
I gave him a full
It's great.
Lesson.
It's great tea.
It's amazing.
For those of you who are listening and have no idea what's happening, there's really good Supernatural prequel drama happening right now on Twitter. You can find out all about it. Just DM me, like, I'll tell
Brooke
you.
Brooke will give you the explainer.
Gilmore Girls debuted on October 5th, 2000. So it debuted a month before this movie.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow.
So this is the last thing that you get Melissa McCarthy in before she's Melissa McCarthy. Yeah.
Incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now she's in everything.
Yeah. And,
so much.
She deserves. I hope she's very happy.
Yeah.
She was in 2 films before Charlie's Angels and
wow.
just like bit parts on TV in a couple
Damn.
Things.
Well, now Prefer. We know.
But then she landed Gilmore Girls and everything changed. And I love that show. So there we go.
When you guys were watching this, quick question on a scene. There's a car crash that happens. I forget at what point, but did you notice that one of the cars that they crash into has literally no people, even though that it was supposed to be driving? So it's like they cut
oh,
to
yes.
I will say I didn't notice.
I didn't notice it when I was watching it this morning, but now that you mention it, I remember noticing it all the other times I watched it when I was like a teenager. Yes.
It's incredible.
I know exactly what you're talking
they
about.
They cut to a car that's like supposed to be driving as like a stunt and there's just clearly no one or no like nothing. It's like a completely empty car. Yes. They're like, oh my god, the people are gonna get hurt, and you're like, there's no one in the car.
when they flip that car and it like basically like skids on its side.
Yeah, yeah.
So aggressive. I mean, the racetrack sequence is good. It's just
it is. And I saw F9 yesterday.
Ooh.
Oh boy.
And I was still impressed with the action in Charlie's Angels.
Maybe Charlie's Angels is like honestly like kind of similar energy to the Fast and the Furious franchise. Like if they kept going, you know what I mean? Like where they could just keep throwing stunts or business into it and like lore, and I would be on board. Like I love the dumb shit about the Fast and the Furious franchise for that reason.
Well, I was gonna say the Fast franchise has lore.
Yes,
like you said it very well. So
like, did you see F9 yet?
Oh, huge fan. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, mad lore.
Absolutely. Wow. It's love so lore. Much about the back business that I was know, like, give me more. I want it.
And to think that it just started with Vin Diesel stealing like DVD players.
Right, right.
In it's East LA.
The trajectory. The trajectory.
I guess the only reason you couldn't do that with Charlie's Angels is because it started with at least two stars were already too big.
Right.
And Fast and Furious, these people became stars because of Fast and Furious.
Exactly. Like, Jordana Brewster has been riding the Fast and the Furious train forever.
Michelle Rodriguez
and Vin Diesel probably have the most expansive careers out of the original cast.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah Michelle's in, like, a lot.
She's good. Like, she's a good actress.
She could be an angel. By the way,
if you want to talk about gay awakenings, Jordan, right. I don't know if I would survive that one. I am obsessed with Michelle Rodriguez. I think she's amazing. I want to see her in everything.
During F9, I was just like staring at her arms and I'm just like, how do I get this body? And I'm like, I kept thinking when I get home, I'm going to Google Michelle Rodriguez workout. Yeah.
I still even remember she was jacked in Avatar. The thing that I remember the most clearly from Avatar is Michelle Rodriguez piloting a helicopter in a white tank top. Like,
does she become a good guy in the end, or is she a bad guy?
She's a good guy, but she dies.
Oh, she does. So she's not back for the sequels.
I mean, I don't know.
Bullshit.
They could bring her back.
We have to see her in the Seed Bearer. That's true. You can bring anyone back.
I assume they're bringing Sigourney Weaver back for Avatar 2, right? So they could bring Michelle Rodriguez back.
I'm sure.
If they could bring Michelle back, then maybe I'll watch them.
Yeah.
All five.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Anyways.
Important.
Well, look. I do think that like these, you can basically do these movies endlessly because you can swap out the leads. Obviously,
true.
Like we said, it's absolutely no plot. It's just basically like an excuse for them to change costumes every 25 minutes when they go to a new location and have to do a new sequence.
Oh, Charlie's Angels. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is great. Yeah, right. Charlie's Angels.
No, yeah, it's literally just like, how many fits can we like go through or stunts,
you know? I'm a fan of the race car fits. They are very cool.
I wonder if this movie inspired the Americans. my favorite show.
The show, yeah.
Good disguises.
I know. So, the non-camp version. The serious version of Charlie's Angels is the Americans.
I mean,
now that you're saying it, I would love to see Kerry Russell and Matthew Reese do some wire stunts.
That would be incredible.
Yeah,
I would love that.
The house blows up and they're like pulled out of it and you're like, are they jumping? Are they flying? How are they doing this?
Or like Kerry Russell doing like one of those like that kick that Cameron Diaz does in that like bathroom at the Soul Train place where she like flips over.
Yeah.
And then you're like, Kerry Russell, how is your wig still on?
This movie loves wigs. Speaking of wigs, everyone has wig business going on. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm almost positive that Lucy Liu has extensions for like the whole thing. Her hair is like very long and very luscious. It's great. Sam Rockwell's hair is like crazy early 2000s, like bad,
I'm so glad
shaggy
we're talking about hair. Yes.
Business.
Very pre-Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire hair before that movie happened. And then Dylan's hair is like, Drew Barrymore, is like curly in some spots and then like crimped,
but then
straight. And I'm just like, I remember doing that to my fucking hair.
That was the worst trend of all time, was like the little curls like on top of your straight hair.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
I have no idea. It's so bad. It's like, or I mean like the tiny braids are a little better, but like the tiny braids was also very much a thing. No good. And of course, Cameron Diaz is rocking like the early aughts,
the
like spiky bob.
I mean, I definitely probably brought a picture of Cameron Diaz to a Great Clips and was like, give me this.
Right.
Yeah, and this is what I want. Something kind of like it, but not the same.
Right. They were trying, but how close? Yeah. I love that Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire comparison, because I do think that from going Azkaban, Goblet of Fire, to Order of the Phoenix, that like hair trajectory is so wild to me. It's like short, utterly insane long, and then like the most tight, compact hair.
Very like,
you're like, what is this business? What happened here?
I hated when they made their hair so tight. I was like, that's not, we were upset with it being long. It was just too long, guys. Like, they needed to get a trim.
Right.
We didn't hate that they had hair.
Yeah.
I agree. I liked the long hair. I was like, this is kind of funny.
Okay, yeah. I think we can all agree that Prisoner of Azkaban is like the Harry Potter film to talk about. Yes. And it also has the best hair, in my opinion, because like it's messy. And you're like, this is what a 13-year-old would look like if they had to dress themselves every day.
Through their hair. It's always like going somewhere.
To bring it back to Charlie's Angels.
Yes.
Did Azkaban come out in 2003 or 4?
I want to say 3.
I think it was 3.
Yeah.
That movie came out only 3 years after Charlie's Angels, and you compare their like special effects,
that's actually like insane.
You would think that Charlie's Angels came out 20 years before.
That just broke my brain, actually.
2004.
Okay, so that's 2004.
But still, four years is still pretty, it's like...
But like, the VFX in Charlie's Angels are really dated and bad.
And do we think that they were trying to make it look good, or were they like going?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I think it has to be part of the camp, because like I keep going back to the wire work, but it's like it's great, but it's so incredibly unrealistic that like I think it is all part of the vibe. And the editing too is like extremely like insane. Yeah. People will get kicked in the face 3 times in a row,
right,
from the same kick.
Yeah.
So I think it's all part of the vibe, which is great.
I don't know if I want to give McGee that much credit though, because like, I've seen his other movies and I'm
but
like,
maybe we give producer Drew Barrymore all the credit.
Right. Ooh, there it is. Yeah. Maybe she knew the tone.
Everything that we were giving McGee credit for on the entire podcast, we're actually giving to producer Drew Barrymore.
I think that's actually smart.
Drew,
you know,
Barrymore,
what? I think that we should do that.
PGA.
Yeah, she was on set pretty much directing it, but like, you know, he was directing it.
Quote unquote, he was directing it.
I mean, I don't know. Oh, right? Mitchie.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's like you watch Terminator and you're like, well, I don't want to say this is well directed.
I forgot that Christian Bale was fully in a Terminator movie. That's
crazy. Yeah.
It wasn't good, but I mean, it was made.
That's true.
It exists.
You gotta give McGee credit for finishing so many movies.
Right. He made it through. He made it through.
Start to finish.
God.
Oh, do you have any other sequences you'd like to hit on? I think
those are like the big ones, I think, for me. Any sort of business with Tim Curry, I like at the beginning.
You're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
I have a question for you guys. Does Tim Curry bring up the queerness of a movie, like,
absolutely,
okay, because I think that he does, but I wanted to make sure that other people agree before I like make
It's like with Clue, it's like him being in Clue, you're like, okay, immediately, even though Clue's like queer, you're like, immediately the camp goes up,
and
this becomes like a more queer, in this movie too, you're like, Tim Curry, okay, it's more queer, cool.
Yeah,
Tim Curry,
but
does,
that's literally what I thought. I was like, oh, I forgot Tim Curry is in this movie is queer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another reason that it helps with the queer classic status too. Right. You're like, well, Tim Curry would never do us wrong.
Right.
You know what
That's
I mean?
It's
true.
The Curry stamp of queer approval.
Yes. He's so great.
Have you done Scary Movie 2? Is he?
We have not. I will
God,
have
which one
to
is
check.
He in? God, those
is
movies have
two?
All blended together for me.
Yeah, I know. I think he's in the second one.
I would agree with you.
I would say, because the first one was actually kind of low budge.
Yeah. And nobody like Anna Faris and like Regina Hall and everybody were nobody.
She deserves so much more.
Anna Faris?
Both of them. Yes.
Yeah.
And Regina
Hall. They're doing good. Regina Hall's killing it on Black Monday. Anna Faris is killing it on Mom.
She
left Mom.
She's not on Mom.
Not on Mom anymore.
And did Mom end?
It did.
No.
Yeah.
No, it did.
No,
it had its final season.
Anna Faris left and then it had its final season. I follow Allison Janney on Instagram and she posts a lot.
Damn,
I think
girl.
It had its final episode. She was just, Anna was just gone for, I think, the last one or two seasons. I can't be trusted on that. But,
no, you're as someone who somehow knows, you're right. Because I was following for Anna Faris because I think she is such a comedic talent that deserves so much more. Yes. Like The House Bunny, one of the funniest movies ever made.
What's Your Number? A classic.
Oh, I watched What's Your Number last year. That was one of my early pandemic watches.
How was that?
It's a good time.
Chris Evans is shirtless for most of the movie. There's like only like one scene where he is not topless.
Oh yeah. My god.
It could have been sexier. Like they could have just let them fuck, but they don't.
But yeah. they can't.
It's upsetting.
His whole early career.
It's crazy.
It's weird. So weird.
Weird.
So weird.
Anyways, okay. Yes.
Before we move into our wrap up, I would like to read a couple Letterboxd reviews that I think are so good.
You were about to do this a while ago when we.
I was. So no. It's a good bridge. I'm just gonna speed round these because there is a lot. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Charlie's Angels is what made me the raging bisexual that I am today. Thank you. My gay ass gone. If I was a girl, this definitely would have been my gay awakening.
Hey, not wrong.
This movie caters directly to the lesbian gaze. If Lucy Liu flipped her hair and looked back at me, I would drop dead instantly. Thank you.
Also true.
Lucy Liu and Matt LeBlanc in a relationship? By crisis. It just keeps going.
Loving the Matt LeBlanc in this movie. Like, we've so gone full circle, but just like imagining him like going home to like the friends and he's like, guys, like I went to LA for this gig, this girl I met, oh my god. And like Ross is like having like a conniption. Like they should have that as the reunion episode.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, hey,
I went to LA for this movie and you'll never believe who I met.
Guess what happened?
That would have been pretty funny if both Charlie's Angels and Friends were happening now, they probably would have worked that into the show. Like, I feel are more meta now.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And everything's meta now. They're like, we're going to make a joke about everything.
Yeah.
We've become Deadpooled, I guess.
Well, like it. I don't like Deadpool.
No,
but
I don't either.
I'm into the meta when it works. Yeah. I'll take some good meta, honestly, but you got to do it.
F9? Really meta in a good way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
In the best way. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Speaking of Deadpool, they're one of my favorite top reviews on Letterboxd. I promise this is the last Letterboxd reference, but says people will say that this is a bad movie and then go rate Deadpool 5 stars, which I think is like a searing review of like how people don't take movies with like women seriously like don't care about this kind of stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Very fair. Like Deadpool is not a more serious movie than Charlie's Angels.
Exactly.
And yet.
Absolutely.
And
not.
Yet.
And it's like also like none of us are asking any man or whatever to take Charlie's Angels seriously. Just like consider it the same way you consider Deadpool.
Right.
Like you're not taking Deadpool seriously, but consider this movie too, because it's just as, I mean, I wouldn't say Deadpool's campy, but it's like trying to be.
Right.
Right.
Charlie's Angels actually is. I don't know. Like if you like Deadpool, you'd probably also like a movie like this with women.
Exactly.
Totally.
Camp cannot be forced. Camp has to be authentically placed in the work.
Yes.
And that's why Charlie's Angels is great. It's there. It's genuine. It's authentic.
It is upsetting that it does get a harder rap because it is women. And you're like, just because this is like women, you're viewing this through a different lens versus anything else with a male. God, it sucks.
Jordan, it does.
Speaking of, how much did this movie make?
Well, I will say
I'm dying to know.
Yeah, this was like very popular. Like this was a hit.
You love that, honestly.
You love to see it. It opened number one in November of 2000, like we said, and it stayed there for 2 weeks, November 3rd, 2000.
Oh.
So wild that this opened in November.
I know.
That actually shocks me.
Yeah.
And for 3 weekends?
It was number one for 2 weekends, and then it dropped to number three.
Oh, because then that would have been Thanksgiving. So
yeah,
like all
right.
Those
another one would have come out.
Something booted it, but the week that it opened,
did the Grinch come out that?
Let me check.
I think that's two. Oh God, is that
2001?
Let me find out.
No, nope,
Carrie,
you're right.
You are correct. How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Rugrats in Paris unseated Charlie's Angels.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
You see, the thing is, the Rugrats did go to Paris.
That's crazy that was like a
Do
full theatrically released thing.
If the two movies that came out on Thanksgiving weekend 2000 hadn't been Rugrats in Paris and How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and the only option for parents to take their kids to is Charlie's Angels, would there be even more queer people?
Yes.
Honestly, I think you're right.
You can actually like single-handedly trace back like people coming out to seeing this movie in theaters.
I mean, it's like a one-to-one. You probably got more heterosexual people from The Grinch. They walked in and they're like, you know what? I guess I'm not queer anymore.
Just moving back to the closet.
Maybe more like boomer parents would have just been like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
No, I think you're right.
Support gay rights.
Yeah, you unlocked. You unlocked a part of, I think, pop culture right there.
Society could be so different and probably much better if How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Rugrats in Paris had just waited a couple more weekends to come out.
Charlie's Angels Supremacy
never came out.
That's true. Jordan hates The Grinch. I also hate that movie.
One of the worst movies that's ever come out.
Amazing.
Yes.
So glad to hear. No, but seriously though, this was like a bona fide hit. It opened like $40 million opening weekend, which was great.
Wow.
It grossed $125 million domestic, and it performed internationally too, which is crazy.
That's
$259 million worldwide. Wow. Crazy. I will say though, such a fucking high production budget. This movie cost $90 million.
We know how much the actors got paid,
right, so that's like 20 mil right there.
I'm guessing Rockwell probably
and Murray
cost a pretty
Murray
and
yeah
Murray
yeah.
Murray was probably yeah Murray and then even like Crispin Glover probably got a pretty decent pay.
Honestly, like, you have the music.
Yeah, the music budget, I'm sure, was like insane, because music licensing is expensive.
Some of those sets were probably kind of expensive too.
Yeah,
totally.
And this is, we're still in like the dawn of VFX, so like it's extra expensive because nobody knows what they're doing.
There's not as many people who can do it.
Right, exactly. It's not, you don't have like 100 different production companies all doing the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild.
They probably put a lot more money than we would think into that terrible green screen.
Yeah.
That last shot, the helicopter shot, they were like, God, this is the money shot. We're really going to make this look good. And you watch it today and you're like, oh. Well, it's like this coming out and Shrek coming out in the same year. And you're wow, this has not aged well in terms of how it looks.
Early CGI is, it's just something really that you have to experience.
Not good.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about. All right. Hey, Jordan.
Yes, Brooke.
Would you like to guess the average Letterboxd rating?
I would like to, honestly.
Carrie, you are welcome to put in a guess, but you do not have to.
It's out of 5 stars, right?
Yeah, it's the average. Yeah.
I'm going to say that most people don't give this a high rating, just thinking about Letterboxd and everything that we've actually talked about. So I'm going to go with a 2.6 is what I'll say.
Okay. Carrie, would you
My guess will be, I think I agree. I don't like guess these as much as you do, so you probably know Letterboxd more than
honestly,
I do.
I thought
but
I would, but I don't.
I'm gonna say probably a 2.0. I'll say like 2.4.
Okay. Well, I have some good news for you guys. It's a 2.9.
Some
people like it. It has a, like a nice little smattering of 5 stars, like in the end, when people are like, "Yeah, it's great."
Love that.
So it's good, you know.
Okay.
It has its fans. It's aged well. Like we said, this is the exact like demographic that is on Letterboxd for this. It's all people being like, "Yeah, this movie made me gay." Thanks, 5 stars. Like,
right, exactly.
It's very much a specific niche. Yeah. So.
I'd probably give it 3.
Yeah.
3.5, you know?
Yeah.
I like
3 stars, but like 3 hearts, perhaps.
Yeah. I love you, but.
Speaking of ratings.
Yes.
Let's go around and say where we think this lands. On the QQ scale, 1 to 5. I mean, look, obviously the legacy of this movie is really good, so I want to give it some kudos for that. And as Carrie mentioned, Tim Curry just automatically adds stars to your film. And I just want to say, like, Lucy Liu in that leather outfit with Cameron Diaz, Andrew Barrymore in drag behind her.
True.
Like, that's revolutionary. So I feel like overall, I'm going to give it 2.5 stars on the QQ.
Very nice.
Down the middle. That's
very nice.
How about you?
Let's see. I'll go with a 2. I agree, though. I think that there are definitely, like, the legacy that this movie has is huge. And I think that there is, as we've mentioned, like, the inherent camp to it. If you were a woman, this could be a huge awakening movie for you.
Yeah, man.
Which is very important. And I think Crispin Glover's character is, like, weirdly somehow queer-coded or just, like, queer energy
yeah.
from him.
The camp is at an all-time high.
So here's... sorry to interrupt you.
No.
Do it.
Crispin Glover's character in this kind of has a Mads Mikkelsen and Hannibal energy.
Ooh, you are like the fifth guest that's brought up Hannibal, and I just want to say every time that Hannibal is brought up, I am so happy. It's like one of my favorite shows, and I'm just addicted to everything about it. And if we want to talk about queer coding, he's the greatest.
Continue.
Yes.
No, you're right.
He definitely felt queer coded because he reminded me of Mads.
Yes. I saw someone, I don't know where I read it, but someone compared him to the Babadook in terms of becoming a queer icon, and I was like, honestly, like, sure, like, I know the Babadook isn't a queer movie, but it's a queer classic now, so, like, look, if Crispin Glover can do it, the Babadook can do it. Oh. So 2 stars for me.
Okay, great. Carrie, how are you feeling?
I think I'm going to copy you. I was already thinking this of doing like 2.5, like half because, but I think if the movie had been directed by anyone other than Mick G, it probably would have been 4.
Yes, I agree.
Or, like if it had been directed by like a woman, literally anyone else besides Mick G.
If a woman wrote it or directed it.
Although I don't think that McGee's intentions were bad, there are definitely a lot of things that bring down the possibility of it being queer-coded. And I think most of the things that are accidental and were definitely intended to appeal to straight people. Which is, like, I love that it's been spun around.
Very frequent. Right. It happens all the time.
I wonder how McGee feels. Like, I genuinely would love to interview McGee about how Charlie's Angels, which he made his, like, hetero fantasy, is actually, like, an iconic classic film for queer
people. I agree. Yeah.
The gays have claimed
now.
It.
Yeah, the gays
Sorry
have claimed
about it.
The gays have claimed Charlie's Angels. They've claimed the Babadook.
They've claimed Mads Mikkelsen.
They claimed Tom Colicchio, you know.
Nothing
we're
is
adding
safe.
To our roster.
Yes.
We're building the team.
But yeah, so I think it's about half because there are so many elements that are obviously from a modern lens very queer, but at the time were probably from a straight male director's perspective, like, oh, like this is so sexy. So you kind of have to bring it down for those intentions initially, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna make this for teenage boys to love, and like the whole intention is now like teenage girls are like, oh, I love this.
For
like,
me,
I mean,
yeah,
he said in that quote you read, like, oh, like I made this because like I didn't get laid in high school, like, you know.
You're like, oh, McGee.
If I hadn't heard that quote, I probably would have rated it higher. But hearing
I'm
that,
sorry.
Like, no, it's fine. No, I'm glad because then I would have been embarrassed.
Well, I just think it's insane that like he essentially admitted that
it.
On Mike. Can you? It's just insane to think about the fact that this probably happens every day, that there are directors on set being like, man, dude, this is something I always wanted. Hot women.
So awful.
In front of my camera.
Isn't that just Quentin Tarantino? whose films I do enjoy.
Exactly.
Know.
No, it's a snuff film for feet. Like every time, you know, what can you say? No lies
Lucy
detected.
Liu.
Just speaking of Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
Actually there's some feet business in this movie. The whole
there
Tim
is.
Curry massage sequence with Lucy Liu.
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
Tarantino watched that. He's like,
I earned
well,
her.
You know what I was
I want
said,
her.
When you said Kill Bill, I was like, oh my God. He saw Charlie's Angels and was like, he knew.
God, that is honestly, fuck. Did he see this movie and then was like, she's got to be in Kill Bill. Wow.
Lucy,
that rules.
Lucy Liu, pretty good actress. Lucy Liu's feet
like, what else,
must have.
What else would Quentin Tarantino have seen her in?
Right. Yeah. No, totally.
That's his reference.
Right. Yeah. They're going to like her agent sent this and they're like, okay, she's going to be in Kill Bill. Wow. There we go. Charlie's Angels, the legacy this movie has.
Oh, God, we're discovering
things. Without this movie, we don't have her in Kill Bill.
Yeah.
And what would Quentin Tarantino be without Lucy Liu in Kill Bill?
It's right. So true. Tear the bitch apart.
Yeah.
Come on.
She is so goddamn good in that movie.
She's so good in that movie. I love her.
Both movies, rather.
The best.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, is she in part two?
For like a little, right?
For a little bit, because I have a flashback.
I've only seen those a few times. Those are like my least favorite of his movies. But just, I think just because they're so violent. It's hard for me to watch them.
Yeah.
But she's so, like, I'll rewatch, like, I'll watch, like, her fight scene with Uma.
Yes.
Constantly.
Every now and then. Yeah. But I haven't, like, seen the whole movies, like, as a whole in a long time.
No, I'm the same. Like, I will go back to that fight scene a lot to watch because you're just like, wow, this is so good. Like, women fighting incredibly.
They are my favorite Tarantino
shocking
because of the because violence, because I'm a crazy person, but I prefer volume 2 to volume 1, which is like the hottest take that I have, but I like it because it's a western and I like
shocking
and yes. I like westerns. So there
I
you
like
go
westerns too. Yeah but that's also a movie, another Lucy Liu film, where the women elevate straight man's story.
Women always having to do the work.
Yeah, yes. It is very much like a Charlie's Angels situation, except it's Bill's what are they called, the Vipers, something like that.
Yeah.
Something
Angels
like that.
Vipers, same thing,
same bit.
Did Charlie's Angels inspire Kill Bill?
I
not
think
only Lucy Liu. I think it did.
I think that's a conclusion that we had to come to.
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow, the galaxy brains on us.
Boom. Carrie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Sorry I talk so long. I know. It's
what?
Oh, my God.
No.
This is all we do.
This is a very normal episode for us.
Good.
We're crazy. Yeah.
No, we love talking about anything and any tangent. So
this was
great.
So fun. This is like my favorite podcast I've done. So.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
I'm crying. Thank you. No,
perhaps
seriously.
Perhaps because I'm very passionate about Charlie's Angels 2000.
As one should be, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the best. You should always come and on and like talk about things that you're passionate about, like no matter the podcast, because it's like it just makes the conversation like 50 times better because you've got to love it.
Right.
You got to have passion. No, seriously, we're very big fans.
Huge
and love
fans.
What you do.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
A great presence online. Always love logging on and seeing whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Speaking of, if people want to find you and your work, where should they go?
You can go just to my Twitter. I'm constantly tweeting and I post my work on there. That's like my biggest platform. And I'm on there as Carrie's Not Scary.
Very good.
Carrie is spelled like the Stephen King character. And my last name, Whitmer, is Wittmer. There is no H, even though most people assume that there is. That helps people find me. It's really surprising, but I have to say that. And I mean, I haven't done that much work lately, but hopefully soon. It's a hard market out there for freelance writers.
It's tough. But the
I'm
Twitter
always,
is
always churning out really random content on Twitter. Currently, I'm probably tweeting about F9.
As one should.
Yeah,
And I believe as of this recording, your icon is Loki from the hit show Loki. So that's a good time.
Loki from Loki.
Loki from Loki. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And we'll link your Twitter in
our
little bio blurb. So go check it out. We are also on Twitter, as excitingly.
Definitely not.
But definitely you can find us perpetually online there. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
At Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Please drop us a rate, drop us a review, drop us a follow.
How about a kick?
A kick? 5 kicks only?
Yeah.
5 out of 5?
5 swing, whatever they do. Flips?
Yeah,
kicks?
Sure.
Yeah.
Kickflips,
martial arts, all around.
Absolutely.
Tweeted us, tell us about your gay awakening to Charlie's Angels.
Absolutely.
You're always looking to add, to the many testimonials online. And also, tell us what you think about this movie and what you might want to see us cover in the future.
Speaking of the future, what are we covering in the future next week?
Next week, we're going from a critically despised film to an extremely critically acclaimed one. Next week we are talking The Social Network.
Yeehaw.
Oh my God. Oh, I can't wait for this.
Click, 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 click.
Secretly one of the best breakup movies of all time.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
God, I can't wait for that one.
We're gonna get deep into it, and we're gonna talk about the crazy online fan shipping world as well, if I had to guess.
Probably.
So, tune in next week for that.
Very exciting. And Brooke, do you have anything you'd like to leave our audience with?
Charlie's Angels is a queer classic, and you show it to your kids if you want your kids to be gay.